What is up, everybody? This is the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Rock Spotlight's mission is to connect others through an educational podcast. Each episode will highlight someone from Rochester, New York, in the health and wellness space who is thinking outside of the box, providing exceptional products and or services, and is elevating our community. Make sure to stay tuned after the podcast for more information on my practice, on my approach to healing, and a little bit more about myself. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to the Rock Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Matt Driscoll, and today we will be wining and dining. Well, not really, but we'll be talking about one of my favorite things on this planet, and that's food. I have Mackenzie Picaretto, owner of Mackenzie's Table in Crosby Lane, on the podcast to talk about making cooking, eating, and nutrition fun. So let me introduce our special guest. Mackenzie Picaretto is a self-taught wellness chef, speaker, and blogger. She is the founder of Mackenzie's Table in Crosby Lane, both of which are focused on connecting our community to the food they eat. Mackenzie believes that being healthy doesn't need to be complicated or boring, that when we learn to listen to our bodies, things fall into place. So welcome to the podcast, Mackenzie.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited. This is my first podcast.
I love it. Ever. Hopefully, yeah. Probably not your last. This will be fun. This will be fun. Like I said, I love talking about food and nutrition, so let's dive right in. So sure. What or who inspired you to choose a career in the health and wellness field?
So I guess twofold question. To go back a little bit, my mother is a naturopath, so she's a doctor of naturopathy. So I grew up around a lot of herbs, supplements, avoiding processed foods, food coloring. And as a kid, you can imagine that was a little frustrating, but it's all that I knew. So she taught us how to read ingredient labels. And so I think subconsciously or consciously, that was indirectly, of course, influencing me. But it wasn't something I thought would be my career. So flash forward, I moved to New York City for about 5 years in my early 20s. And I was everything from waitress to working in PR to ending up in real estate in the end. And I realized I didn't love real estate, kind of came to this fork in the road where I needed to choose if that was my career path. And after dabbling in a bunch of different things, I came across an ad for IIN, which is the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. It's the largest online nutrition platform and school in the world. It's pretty incredible. And so that was just kind of this light bulb full circle moment for me, where it was like my whole life, I was around nutrition from my mom. I loved to talk about it. I was the friend who would give you advice about it, but I never thought it was going to be my thing. And then seeing this ad kind of just, it all came together. And so I signed up for the program and I moved back to Rochester about halfway through and ended up finishing here because it was virtual. So I'd say those two things, my mom probably is the who kind of subconsciously, and then the what would be the school really. It was one of like a big turning point in my life and career.
Love it. Now tell me about your businesses. I mean, I just go, we're going to talk about Instagram later, but you go on your Instagram page and it's just, it looks delicious. It just, everything looks amazing.
Thank you.
I'm sure it tastes amazing too, but tell me about your businesses. Cause this is new to me. I thought you just owned Mackenzie's Table, but you also own Crosby's Lane. So tell me about both of those.
So that's brand new. So I'll start Mackenzie's Table. If I kind of start where I left off, when I moved home from New York City, I finished the program, which kind of certified me as an integrative health coach. And I thought I was going to do and have a practice. I thought I would see people as a health coach. And as I was kind of preparing for that and kind of creating the branding and all of that, my gut was just kind of like, this isn't what I want to do. I like to help people and provide value, but I didn't really want the one-on-one kind of hand-holding. So I started a blog. I was working full-time in sales. It was very part-time. And the blog was Mackenzie's Table. That's where that came about. So it was really an outlet to share my recipes and to talk about health and kind of what my philosophy around living a health-conscious life, what that means. So it started just as that, and it kind of snowballed. I started to do some free talks at the library and some workshops and some events. And that's kind of how it, you know, took off from there. I ended up, which we'll talk about the pop-up dinners later, but that is where it kind of led to, we're doing these health-focused 5-course monthly pop-up dinners here in Rochester for about 20 people and just really focused around food that is delicious and just happens to be good for you. I don't believe that you have to pick, but that's Mackenzie's Table. And that's kind of, that is still ongoing. It's still a blog, still my Instagram, kind of all connected from there. And then Crosby Lane just started 12 weeks ago. So that is really new.
Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you. It is the name of the street I grew up on. So that is where the name comes from. But basically, it kind of fell in my lap. I mean, my end goal is to have a brick and mortar of some sort where people can come in and sit down. But this kind of came across my radar. A friend of mine who works in the building and said, there's this kitchen that is available. Do you want to look at it? And it's not customer facing. So it's what you would call a ghost kitchen or a virtual kitchen. And it's becoming more popular where you just have the kitchen and you're doing your thing and kind of pick up only. So I looked at it and thought, well, this is the perfect low risk way for me to try things out and really learn how to run a food business, because it doesn't really matter how good your branding is or how good your food is, even if you're not turning a profit. So that was part of this too, is just learning how to run the back end. So I launched that about 12 weeks ago, and we are a whole food bakery and market. And there's two prongs to that. So the market side are items like granolas, jams, and make different vegan cheeses like nacho cheese, ricotta cheese. And then the bakery side, I do a lot of vegan cakes out of cashews. So like cheesecakes, chocolate cakes, things like that. But we're all mostly dairy-free, gluten-free, soy-free, and free of refined sugar. So it's been really cool to take things I make on the blog and now be able to offer them to the public and fill a void here in Rochester that I really feel like we're missing out on as far as healthy food that's available. So it's been really, really good learning process, but so fun and really, really well received so far.
Congratulations again. That's awesome. I talk about this a lot on the podcast, and I think you and I are in a phenomenal field, the health and wellness space. And I just think it's going to just continue to take off in the next 5 to 10 years with just this information overload. People know that, you know, we're going down a bad path with our health. Yeah. We want to get back on track. We need help. We need people in our corner. And you specifically with nutrition, you got to be so excited with all these opportunities that are going to present themselves in the next 5 to 10 years, I would guess.
Yeah, it's really cool to be a part of it. I think that there's definitely a big shift, like you said, towards healthier lifestyle. We're living in such a modern, fast-paced world. And I think we're getting to a place, whether it's talking about mental health more, talking about burnout, talking about things physically. I think that's kind of the plus side of social media, I think, where there's been a lot more transparency around these things we all deal with as humans, whether it's body image, mental health, or what you're putting in your body. It's all connected. So yeah, it's cool to be a part of the wellness wave, I guess.
Now, what does nutrition mean to you?
I guess if I could boil it down, I would say that it means paying attention to whatever feeds you and feels good for you, whether that is physically, mentally, spiritually, kind of all together. And that was a lot of the IAN program I did. They look at things really holistically. So it isn't just about the food you put in your body. It's also about your job. Do you like your job? Are you fulfilled? Your relationships, are they toxic? Are they healthy? Spirituality, whatever that means to you, feeling connected to something bigger than what we are here. So I think when people think of nutrition, they just think of a nutrition label or they think of food, but really it's everything we're feeding ourselves out of. That's, like I said, I have all of that included, not just the food.
That's a great answer. So we already talked about your Instagram page looking delicious. Now your brand makes nutrition sound and feel fun. Is that the message you're trying to portray?
That's a big part of it, I would say. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think another part is that so many people think healthy eating has to be, like you said in my intro, has to be boring or bland or complicated. And I really try to find that intersection and teach people that you can have delicious food that's also really good for you. It's not one or the other. It doesn't have to be like this cheat meal, which I can't even stand the cheat day, the whole just the culture around that I don't love. I think there's a way to not be deprived, not count calories, not feel restricted, but just have delicious food. It doesn't have to be quote good or bad. And you can have both. So that's been a lot of what I like to share, is just the idea that you can learn what your body needs, what feels good for you, and you can have both.
Now, do you take all these pictures? Do you have a special camera for those? Special filters? No, what do you do? What's your secret?
I have a nice camera. I don't even know the name of it. It's a Sony like A6000 or something. And that is the one nice camera I have. And I will say I used to use it a lot more because the phones have gotten so good. And so like, I would say 99% of them are on my phone. If I want something specific where there's like more blur in the background, of course I'm not a photographer, so excuse my fancy terms. But if I want a few things like that, I know a couple tricks. I know enough to like take something that I like, or I have an ebook and I took those photos with that camera, but I would say 99% are my on my cell phone. And my tips for that really are just get near natural light. I think that you don't have to be a really fancy photographer, but if you go near natural light or near a window, you have a way better chance of taking a good photo. And then secondly, there's some editing for sure. And there's so many different apps for that. And the idea isn't to make it look crazy edited, but it's to bring out, you know, the natural colors and make it look the best it can. So it's twofold. And I think people forget how often photos are edited for food specifically. I don't think there's a photographer out there that doesn't edit. I mean, if the if a non-photographer person saw, I remember a few photography classes I took and saw like the befores and the afters, and I'm like, oh my God, like 90% of this is editing, and that's a skill too. So it's not as much about the actual photo. It's more just the light and the editing.
Work smarter, not harder. Yeah, technology's there.
Yeah,
use it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So photography 101, you want the light source behind you, right? Shining on the object.
You want to be, yeah. So if you're like right now.
I'm asking for a friend.
The window is in front of me right now. So like you just would never want to take a photo with the window behind someone because they'd be backlit and it wouldn't make sense. With food, I live in like kind of a one room loft situation. And so I will take my stuff over to the windowsill, and the difference from even, and we have huge windows, but even from where I'm now to over to the window, it is a huge difference. So that's my biggest advice. If it's like bright, bright sun, that's tricky too. So being
having a balance
in a window is ideal. Yeah.
Okay. So how do we make eating and nutrition more of an experience than a chore?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think I would first ask yourself, why does it feel like a chore to begin with? Because I, of course, have a hard time relating because I'm in the kitchen 90% of the day and I love it, right? But I'm very aware that not everyone feels that way for one way or another. Maybe they're really busy and they have so much on their plate that they can't get in the kitchen, or maybe they really just don't enjoy the process of it. But I would like to think that all humans like food, right? You don't really need anyone that isn't excited about food in some way, even if they don't want to cook it. So I would try to look at it from a couple different perspectives, like maybe start to cook more things that you really love or that are a little more exciting, some of your favorite foods. Look through recipe books. There's so many things online that can maybe get you inspired. I also think just getting in there, I guess if you don't love it to begin with, that's different. But I just think with confidence, we get excited about things and that builds to wanting to do it more and being encouraged. It's like when someone make, say, like a salmon dish for a friend and it goes so well, they crush it and they get really rave reviews. That's probably like your go-to dish, right? People have a few of those things. So I think when you have the confidence of that, it might change your perspective of it being a chore. And if you really just don't have the time, it maybe look ahead and plan a few meals or get more efficient and prep a few things ahead of time. And that stuff can really help make it more of a better experience versus feeling like, oh my God, I have to start from scratch every single time that I start a meal, which even someone like myself, I don't want to do. It's a lot.
So I guess to answer my own question, I think I'm time poor. I think that's why it's more of a chore to me. But what my wife and I did during the pandemic was we purchased HelloFresh several times. That was like a date night. It was awesome.
Yep.
Got the bottle of wine. We just did it together. Kids were sleeping upstairs. It was great.
Yeah,
and that's such and they a tell good, you what to do.
That's such a good point. And that's like the perfect middle ground where like you're not starting from scratch, but you're still getting to be in the kitchen. You're still getting to cook. You might get to learn something new and you feel like you created something to eat. So that's great. That's a perfect, I think, bridge where if you really don't have the time, but you want to get in or even learn a couple new techniques and that you can take away the next time you make something, whether it's with HelloFresh or not. But I love those boxes.
I mean, we're not trying to talk like relational advice here, but I think it was quality time for my wife and I. And it was a hobby. And I think we need to have separate hobbies, but also hobbies together with our spouses, with our partners. And that's lifelong. I mean, right? Cooking together could be a fun little hobby.
It's true. For sure. And I think it will evolve with time, of course. But if right now specifically you don't have the time, it's so great. I love that they also, they give you directions. You're on the same page, like me cooking all the time. I feel like my boyfriend's so willing to help out. And he's like, what can I chop? What can I do? But I'm also kind of controlling in the kitchen, as you would be when you're just always doing it. So I think having something like that to bring you both back to like, we're following the directions together.
For sure.
It's kind of a nice thing to do together.
Now I'm kind of going off script here, but like spices and herbs, I noticed that, I mean, good cooks use a lot of that, and that just makes your taste buds bounce and the flavor just come out. That's what I noticed with HelloFresh. You know, some of the ingredients, I don't think it was the healthiest per se. I kind of cut a lot of the ingredients in half and I avoided some, but oh my gosh, like when you start using cilantro and lime and whatever, a lot of garlic and ginger. Oh my gosh, it tastes so much better. So are you big with, I'm sure you're big with that.
I am, but I would say that, I would say first and foremost, it's salt. If I'm going to say anything, I think that the general public undersalts their food. And that's why when you go to eat, you think it's a million times better. It's just salt. And I don't mean the kind of table salt that's iodized and not good for you, but you can buy a good quality salt. You can buy sea salt. I think that we become kind of scared
what kind of salt as a public. What kind of salt do you recommend?
So I use two kinds. I use Himalayan pink salt, which you don't have to, but it's one of those that's highest in trace minerals. So I'll use that as like my fine salt. So if you need something that's more fine. Secondly, I use a flaky sea salt. And I use Maldon is the brand. And those are like the thick, flaky, coarse pieces that you would use to finish. So the fine salt I'm using, like whether you're in baking or you're mixing things up, the flaky sea salt is like on your egg or on something when it's like kind of done and it gives that crunch. But I think salt would be first and foremost where people just don't use enough. And of course you don't want to just taste straight salt, but everything I've, from what I've learned, you know, throughout cookbooks and through watching different documentaries and things, it really does change the molecular makeup of the food. So there's a reason people salt the meat ahead of time and let it sit because it's going to tenderize it. If you cook your chicken and then you add salt on your plate, you're just going to register the salt, right? It hasn't penetrated the food. So if that's one thing I'd say with spices is to learn to salt correctly and trust yourself with salt. And then otherwise, yeah, I mean, fresh herbs always, like always going to be amazing. Something like you said with lime juice, I think acid is huge. There's a book called a show and a book, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, and it's by Samin. And she is
Netflix? Was that a documentary too?
There's a four-part, yep. So there's a four-part series.
Yeah, Netflix, I saw that.
A book. And the book is like maybe 25% recipes. The rest just go through these four. And I learned so much just in the sense of like breaking food down to those four things. That is why every dish tastes, every well-balanced dish you have tastes great. And if you just learn how to kind of check in with those, you don't have to be as rigid, you know, stuck to a recipe. You can just think, what is this missing? It's missing acid. How can I bring acid in? Well, there's so many different ways you can do that. So it's, I think learning kind of those nuances. I don't do a ton with dried herbs. I feel like garlic powder, paprika, like salt, pepper, oregano. I don't go crazy. Maybe like curry, like if you're going that direction, but normally it's just the basics. Like
keep it simple.
I do really well.
Holy salt. That lady was salting the meat, like so much salt. Yeah. I was like, I am not using enough salt.
And it's funny. That seems alarming, but so much of it like absorbs into the meat and flavors it. And even something so simple, why we salt boiling water for pasta or why we salt water when you're going to like blanch or boil potatoes or veggies. There's different times you can add salt. There's different reasons to add it. And I'm definitely not an expert, but I do know that I'll notice even when I'm with people, I was like showing my boyfriend's mom how to make hamburger, like just seasoned hamburger meat and the amount of like garlic powder and salt I put on. She's like, I would have never put that much on. And I'm like, well, this is how much it needs, you know? And that's why so good.
So two more questions on salt. Why is iodized salt bad, table salt? And then why, when you go out to a restaurant, is that food so salty? Yet if you use a ton of salt on your food at home, it's not the same. You're not parched the whole rest of the night.
So do you feel like your food's too salty when you go out?
I feel like a lot, when you go out to restaurants, it's just loaded with, is it just excess sodium? Is it the type of salt they're using? Is it MSG?
It could be a lot of different things. Okay. I think first table salt, like when doctors had said back in the day, and everyone's like, stay away from salt. It's really like the table salt, which has no nutritional value. It's been stripped away of any nutrition. If you look at something like a sea salt or an Himalayan pink salt, there's so many trace minerals in salt that we need, electrolytes, things that we need to function, that I think people strayed away from for so long, which is not great for you nutritionally. As far as going out, I think it depends, of course, on where you're going. Mm-hmm. I think if you eat out every night, sure, you could probably be consuming a little too much because it's a lot. But I think for the most part, at least like the restaurants I've worked at, I think like they didn't even have salt and pepper on the table. And to me, that's the sign that they know what they're doing and they know how to salt it. And I think it depends where you are, I guess.
For sure.
But the places I've worked at, I think they always did such a great job. I remember I'd like serve something like a steak and people will immediately be like, some people, can I have salt and pepper? And I wanted to be like, you didn't even take a bite yet. Like it is perfectly seasoned, believe me, but it depends where you are and what kind of place that is.
Okay.
But for the most part, it should be balanced. I think if you're tasting salt, they probably just oversalted it.
Makes sense. Now tell us about the 5-course meals and private in-home dinners you offer at Mackenzie's Table.
So the pop-up dinners started, the 5-course meal started April 2019. I went to FLX Table. I don't know if you've ever been there in Geneva.
I have, yeah.
It is. Okay, so it's like a farm-to-table, small, intimate experience. Mm-hmm. So went there for my 30th birthday, fell in love with it. And a couple months later, I was just thinking like, I could do something like that, except really focus on health. And not to say that, you know, local and farm-to-table isn't healthy, but focus more on my spin of things where I could add in like a vegan cheese or something else that, you know, was a little more health focused. And so April 2019, I did my first one. It was at Living Roots. They have a beautiful back room and it was 18 people and it was a blast. It was like so fulfilling and so fun to be in person with people and serving my food. And so from there, I just said, okay, well, I'm gonna just keep doing this until people stop buying tickets. And thankfully we went over a year. And some of them sold out in a few minutes. It was always so great and so fun. And so, yeah, they're 5 courses, health focused, and they start with kind of a tasting platter. People get to chat, kind of talk to each other. And I switch up the menu every time. It's always a surprise. And I can definitely can accept people's allergies or can accommodate them. But the menu is always a surprise. People have asked if they can know ahead of time. And I like having the ability to change last minute if I need to. I like people not knowing. And that's kind of who it's for, is someone that's a little more adventurous or a little more open to trying things. And then we hit COVID, obviously shut down for over a year. And then we just started back up this past April. So there's been a couple months and we're now at Jackrabbit Club. We have been for the last like 10 dinners. They have a better logistic kitchen set up for me there, but they're right next to Good Luck. And it's their event space. So
are you booking way out for that?
So I usually do. I'm trying to do one per month right now. We did April, May. June's kind of on hold. We had like an issue with dates, but there is one scheduled July and August. So usually I'll put tickets up about a month in advance, but I think what I'm going to start doing is just putting like a few up at a time so people can see the upcoming dates. And I'll usually tell people through Instagram when I'm launching tickets and give people a heads up, because sometimes they do sell out. And right now we're not at one long table because of COVID. People are sitting in their own parties, but I'm just glad that we're able to still do them right now. And then secondly, the in-home dinners just came out of doing the pop-ups and having people say like, could I do this at home? And I was like, well, I don't see why not. So I do them at home. They're 4 courses. They're just one less course. And that's on average, I would say like 4 to 6 people. I can do maybe up to 10 or 12, depending on what your household and how much, you know, silverware and plates that you have. But that's been really cool too, to be able to just bring it to people. They don't have to leave. It's like a fun in-home experience for whether it's a couple or some friends. It's been fun. So that's kind of just on an ongoing basis. People reach out if they have interest, and there's some info on my website, but that's more just as they come in, I'll take them when I can.
Very cool niche. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's talk obesity now. Let's talk like a big issue in our country, in our world, but definitely our country. So 43% pre-COVID, 43% of Americans are obese. And I read that and I was shocked by that. I think it used to be overweight, but now it's obese. So like we're not headed in the right direction with that. And that is affecting so many things, right? Cognitively, our physical performance, our sleep, everything. More likely to get diabetes, cancer, all that bad stuff that we don't want to have. Now that was pre-COVID. Yep. So I'm only guessing, in my professional opinion, that with people being more sedentary, not being able to do as much, not being able to go to the gym, that number is going to be probably closer to 50% once we come out of this pandemic, whenever that is, this year, next year, whatever. So in your professional opinion, how do we start tackling this big conversation, the obesity epidemic that we're under?
Well, you're right. It's an epidemic. And specifically, obviously, I can only speak to our country, but I know our country is one of the worst for sure. And I guess at first, when you said that, I was thinking about like, what are the contributing factors to begin with? Like, how do we get where we are now? Why is that the case? And I'm definitely not an expert or a doctor, but I think when I think about the contributing factors, I think about many different factors. I think there's like the food politics, the food system, the money that's involved in keeping things marketed, fast food, processed foods. There's a lot of money to be made in that stuff. I think as far as like subsidizing foods like corn and soy, like all that stuff is subsidized. Farmers get subsidies and therefore they're found in so many of our foods and they're so, so processed. It's not like the corn you're getting in the field. I mean, it's so different when you talk about a corn oil. So those are just really inflammatory. So I think people are just like chronically inflamed on a low level for years and years and years, just all the time. I think even doctors, I was thinking of this stat that I heard a long time ago, that doctors are only been trained, at least recently, in 24 hours of nutrition in their whole degree and training.
Hey, you're
and
right that about that.
Blew my mind. It has been like glue to my mind since I heard it. And I'm all for, it's not about knocking Western medicine. There's a time and a place, like very grateful for it. And of course it's here for a reason, but that simple thing to me was like, how can people be fully supported by their, you know, take care professionals or people that are supposed to care for them if they're not even being asked about what they're eating and what's being put in their body, which literally makes up who we are. So I think about all these factors. Lastly, I think about food access too and food insecurity. And there's a lot of communities where fast food and cheaper things, that is what is available either geographically or financially. And that's really tough too, that these foods that are cheaper to make are going to be more affordable and it definitely costs more to eat better. So with that aside, I guess in terms of like some of why we are where we are, I think in terms of getting out of it, I think it starts in our communities. I mean, that's just the way I think of it because it does feel like such a big thing when you think about an epidemic. It's like, how in the world are we as a country gonna, you know, shift in the right direction? And I think about it within the community of sharing value where I can, and hopefully that's a ripple effect of someone else sharing the value. I see different free like food cuppers pop up or gardening programs or produce programs at schools and these different communities that could use that extra help in education. And so hopefully that's where it is. I mean, I think it has to start within communities and at home really, and hopefully teaching kids and giving more education around that so that as they get older, they can navigate that a little bit better and have more education. I mean, some people, maybe they know, you know, certain foods aren't as great for them, but I do believe a lot of it is a lack of education and marketing too. I mean, you look at so many, you go down the cereal aisle and it's like all the cereal, it's heart healthy, like such crap being marketed that I feel for people. I mean, I tell people to be a defensive shopper because I feel like you do have to be, you can't believe what's on the front of the box. And I'm someone that has a good amount of knowledge and knows what I'm looking for, but I think the average person doesn't. And I mean, half of that is like, no one ever told them and they're, you know, you trust marketing, you trust FDA, whatever it is to put safe things on our shelves. And I think a lot of this is where it stems from, kind of on the back end. And I don't know how to fix that, but I think we can focus on our, you know, on our communities and educating hopefully new generations too.
That's a great answer. Yeah. I think we're under attack by these big companies, this media, our kids, especially, and us every day, but we have a choice every day. We have a choice on what we're going to put in our bodies. And my big thing is, how are you going to feel after you put that junk in your body? Like, we need to think about that. We need to be aware of that. Mm-hmm. And if you know the consequences and you know how you're going to feel and you're okay with it, then eat it. But if you don't feel like feeling like crap 20 minutes later, then don't eat it or just get on the path to start working on that.
It's interesting. I think sometimes people don't know how good they could feel either, right? If you've been eating a certain way and you're used to being in chronic pain or fatigue or sleeping like crap or walking around literally in pain every day. I mean, when I have a cold or when something's a little off, I'm like, oh my God, you know, because I'm used to feeling great. And I mm-hmm. think that's a huge thing where people don't realize how good they could feel. And so that is a lot of, it's a norm for a lot of people in America where you're just used to feeling not that great. So you don't necessarily feel that effect as much.
But it does get easier. It's the hardest part is starting. And those first couple weeks, sure. the first month, it gets easier because your mm-hmm. hormones change and they reset. And they start communicating to yourself better.
Yeah, your taste buds reset. I mean, that's even with sugar, our country is so, I would say sugar is like the problem. I get very heated about. I've done some talks on sugar and it's one of the things
we'll bring it back. We'll do one on sugar next. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally
fatty liver. I'm reading about fatty liver and how these people don't even touch a drop of alcohol. They have cirrhosis of the liver from the sugar they're eating.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's just hidden. It's like, we know there's sugar in a cookie. We know there's sugar in a donut. That's fine. Make the choice to have it or not. But it's hiding in like everyday stuff. It's hiding in people's oatmeal and your cereals and things you think are being, you know, that are nourishing you. And it's really just heartbreaking, honestly, that it's just hiding everywhere. And it's so addictive. It's more addictive than cocaine. It's been proven in studies. And so you wonder why people continue to go back to this stuff. And a lot of it is literally because it's addictive. So when you do like a sugar detox, I know I don't love that word, but like you really do have like detox symptoms. And after a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, you will feel differently towards it. And you potentially might not crave it as much anymore, for sure.
I had Laura Catalano on. Do you know her? Nutritionist in the area?
That's familiar.
Laura out in Webster. But she was talking about sugar and how addictive it is. Yeah, I had her on a previous podcast. She was good. I got another business venture for you. So Mackenzie's school table or Mackenzie's cafeteria. Like you could go to these schools and show these kids how eating healthy can be cool. Like, look at these pictures and it looks delicious and it tastes even better. And then here you go. Try it. What do you think? Oh, wow. That's really good.
I feel like because I don't have my own kids right now, I'm like, I know in my head when that happens, I'll probably be even more passionate about it.
You'll be all jacked up.
But I'm sure I'm going to be like the crazy mom. So yeah, I think that is definitely an area. Like I think about hospital food a lot and I think about cafeteria food a lot. Those are two areas where I'm like, this is so like, it is just, it affects so many people every day. So many people are eating from these institutions. And I think that it could be so much better.
Government run, government led.
One day.
They're so far behind too. I mean, you know, the food pyramid to the food plate. It's just like, it's just it needs so much changing, but that's awesome. Put that on the back burner, pull that out in a few years.
Yeah. In a few years. Yeah.
If you decide to have kids. Okay, here we go. So let's keep going here. What does your diet look like? Take me through a normal day of eating for you. What, when, and how much?
This is an interesting question because I think people always want the like, what do you eat in a day? And you're into food or you're into nutrition. And I share a lot of what I eat on Instagram, but I don't ever really put it in that context, mainly because I think people like to see things that they can maybe mirror exactly themselves. And I could never know what's good for your body based on mine. So I love to give ideas or inspire, but at least online, I don't really go through like, this is exactly what I have today because it changes so much based on my mood, based on the year I'm having, the month I'm having, it's all over the place. But I also try to not focus on the labels too, which I think is important. I think a lot of people now are like, are you vegan? Are you paleo? Are you keto? Are you gluten-free? Oh, I saw that you're eating vegan cheese, but then you're eating meat. Like it confuses people because we want to be put in a box or we want to understand people. And so I usually just try to not have a label and to tell people to listen to their bodies. So for example, I can give you like what I'm eating today or what I ate yesterday. It changes all the time. But I really like to, I always have breakfast. I think it's super important. Everyone's different. I used to be someone that eats breakfast right away, like immediately. And now I sort of let myself get hungry and listen to my body. Some days I'm hungry within an hour and some days it's two, but I always drink water right away. If that's something I could say is a one size fits all is like, just drink water right away. It will slowly wake up your digestive system gently.
I agree.
I usually go for oat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like the one thing we should all probably be doing. And then I usually go for a walk and then I'll come back and have breakfast. And for breakfast, it really varies. I try to do something for me that's like fat, protein, fiber-based. I feel the best and filled up that way. I have hormonal imbalances, so everything I'm saying, take with a grain of salt for anyone listening, because I do best with like low gluten, low sugar, low dairy. That's kind of just an overarching way that I operate. And I don't say no because I don't believe in restriction or not having things. I just know I feel my best when those things are lower. Also, as a side note, I used to get a lot of, when I would have yogurt, I used to have a lot of like postnasal drip or mucus because dairy can create mucus in the body. And it didn't happen for years, then it started happening. So I now will have like coconut milk yogurt or goat's milk yogurt because goat and sheep's milk is easier digested by humans. So definitely a side tangent, but just for people wondering in terms of dairy, those are like great alternatives. So normally I'll have eggs, usually, or like an avocado toast or something that is just kind of filling and satiating in that way. For example, today for lunch, I'm having leftover from last night, which is really often what I'm doing. So we had an Asian chopped salad. So that was like cabbage, scallions, cilantro, avocado, peppers, carrots, and like a peanut dressing with some chicken. And then tonight, I think I'm making like a gluten-free carbonara, which is funny because it's not the norm that we'd have at home, because it's just a little more indulgent. But we watched an Italy travel TV show the other night, and so they were doing carbonara. I was like, I'm going to make that at home and just do it like a little healthier.
Heck yeah, do it up.
Yeah, but I would say I just try to really like high fat, high fiber protein. That's what I feel the best. Mm-hmm. Lots of veggies, high quality animal protein, eggs. That's what I feel the best on. And then the rest is kind of peppered in here or there. I do always usually have a bite of some kind of dark chocolate or some kind of sweet at night. That's usually a must.
Savory. Love it. So what about, you've given a lot of tips throughout this podcast, but any other actionable tips for listeners to start getting more confident in the kitchen to work on better dietary habits?
Yeah, I would say to one, just get in the kitchen more and try and trial and error. I think people get really intimidated by recipes or by things they see online, or they mess up once and they don't want to do it again. And I think you just have to keep doing it and keep messing up and tasting things as you go. But also say, look at recipe books, look at blogs, just get inspired in some way. Every week, I tend to look through a magazine or I'll look online quickly because I get really bored easily. So even though I'm cooking a lot, I like to switch it up and keep it interesting. So that will give me usually some kind of inspiration. And even if I don't cook what I'm seeing, it will spark something to potentially make for the week. What else can you do? Maybe even like entertain or have people over. I feel like that always gets you kind of excited to think about new ways to cook or new ways to do things. But really it's just get in the kitchen and just do it more. I think people are so scared to mess up, or if, you know, if a recipe calls for an onion, it's like, oh my God, is it red? Is it white? And like, is it going to mess up? And you're not going to mess it up that badly. And if you do mess it up, you'll learn, you know? So I think that that's the best advice I can give, is just keep trying stuff. I think with the internet, we have so much at our fingertips. There's so much on YouTube. There's so many wonderful people creating books and podcasts and TV shows that you can learn from. So just get in the kitchen. And I would say a little side tip of that is prepping more, just being a little more prepared for the week. I usually plan like 3 meals for the week and then leave the other nights up to see kind of how it pans out. But that way, at least I feel a little ahead of it. Like, okay, we know what we're doing for a few nights, because even though I love to cook, I'm just like anyone else. If I open the fridge and I'm starving and I see like full veggies and raw meat, the thought of how long it takes for it to get to my plate, I'll sometimes just want cereal, which is also fine too. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you have a few things ready, whether you found rice that's already cooked or you already had some veggies that are cooked, you're like a quarter of the way there. And I think you might get the energy to do it versus just looking at the long list ahead of you.
Yeah. So many of us get paralysis by analysis, right? So just roll up your sleeves, get your hands dirty, get to work, get in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do you practice self-care? And I see a bunch of books behind you on the shelf back there. And what are you currently reading? God.
Yeah. So self-care, I feel really lucky right now that I get to plan my days and my schedule is on me. And I've worked for other people for many years and gone to an office. And I definitely think it was a little harder then. I had to kind of structure it in more. But I think now it just looks like listening to my body. And that sounds really kind of cliche and like it's a buzzword these days to like listen to your body. But doing my morning walks has been really kind of life-changing, which sounds dramatic. But I think throughout COVID, I was reminded a lot of the basics that we tend to forget about. So drinking enough water, getting enough sleep, and moving your body, like the simplest things we can do. And so those are a lot of the ways that just simple self-care for me. It doesn't have to be a massage or some lengthy thing or some retreat out of town. It's really walks, I'd say podcasts. Going to the infrared sauna is kind of like my one little treat for myself Lumos. That I really love.
Shout out
to
Lumos.
They're the freaking best. Rachel, the owner, has become a friend and they're just killing it. And I love them and what they're doing. So that's also some me time, reading, like you said. So yeah, I think just getting to plan my days right now makes me feel like I'm kind of always putting my needs pretty high priority, which is good. I'm very lucky for that. In terms of books, yeah, my boyfriend has 1,000 books. This isn't even like a quarter of what is in my apartment. But currently I'm reading The Power of Habit.
Yeah.
Is not that new. It was super popular, probably still is, but it's his. And I saw it on the shelf and I was like, I have never read this. I've seen this everywhere. So I just started it maybe a week ago, but I don't know if you read it.
Yellow cover, right? Yellow and red, like yep. Bicycle on there. Yep. I think I started reading it. I didn't finish it, but yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's about the kind of the neurological like behind why we do what we do and how our habits form, and it's interesting. So that's the current read.
Awesome, great book. Well, anything exciting lined up this year with your business?
I guess the whole thing is exciting in the sense that I don't know what's happening next. So we're really in a fun like trial phase where everything kind of feels like an adventure, and I'm really just taking the next year to see how this goes. To learn everything that I can and to kind of jump off from there. So we'll see in a year where we're at, but I'd love to have a actual physical space people can come into, and we'll see if that's next year or not, but that's about it.
So how can listeners connect with you online to hear more about your businesses?
So mackenziestable.com is where you can kind of find everything. That's where all my recipes are, the blog is, and you'll also find notes about Crosby Lane and the dinner, pop-up dinners as well. So that's kind of a hub for everything. And then Instagram is Mackenzie's_table. And links to Crosby Lane and all of that are right there.
Awesome. Final question, you ready?
Yeah.
If you have a friend coming to Rochester who's never been here, where would you take them?
And we mean food, correct?
Whatever you want
that's
to do.
What you're getting
yeah, whatever you want.
I was going to say the only
probably
the only
food for
thing
you. Yeah.
I'm going to. Okay, yeah. I mean, most people would think of other things too, but I'm only thinking of what we're eating. So, I would say for breakfast, we would go to Atlas Eats. Have you been there?
Love Atlas, yeah.
Oh my god.
Well, wait a second. Atlas. No, I'm thinking of Aladdin's. Atlas is in Irondequoit. No, I need to get there. Mm-hmm. They do a different country every month, right?
Yeah. So they have two things. They do like lunch and or like breakfast and lunch. I think just on the weekends and then, or maybe during the week, I'm botching that, but either way, they do have breakfast and lunch. And then they also have dinners, where they do a different country every month. And they're like cool. A couple weekends of the month and they have like a 4-course dinner. I've done that before. It's amazing. Their breakfast specifically, I love so much. It's in a little quaint neighborhood of Irondequoit. It's kind of a hidden gem. It's pretty popular now, but
yeah.
It's great. And
do you have to make a reservation?
Pancakes. You don't. I don't think they take reservations right
for
now
breakfast.
Because
okay.
of COVID. They just reopened for outside dining, but you can always do takeout as well. You can grab and go. But they do have they've been doing takeout the whole pandemic. They just reopened for their outside seating. But
okay. They
have these kimchi pancakes that sound wild, but they are incredible. So okay. Definitely order those. For lunch, I would go to Vula's Greek Sweets, which is on Monroe Ave. Have you been there?
Never been there, no.
Okay, great.
I'm writing all this down. This is good.
You write all this down. Okay, so Vula's is amazing. They are Greek and they feature a lot of vegan things as well. But they have this one combo platter that is a Greek salad, spanakopita, which is the feta, spinach, and filoto pastry. And then their lemon potatoes, which are out of this world. So they do brunch as well. They'll do eggs during brunch. The rest is vegan, I think, but lots of veggies and vegetarian options. So really, really good. And sweets like baklava and all the desserts you could ever think of from Greece. And then for dinner, I'm going to have to say a couple of things here because I really can't pick one. But I would say Vern's is one of my favorite restaurants in Rochester, food and ambiance.
Park Ave, right?
Yep, right on Park Ave. And then I would also say Rella, which I don't know if you've heard of Rella.
No, I've never been there.
So Rocco's is on Monroe Ave over by the Strong Museum. It's an Italian restaurant. It's amazing. It's the same owner as them. And it's a couple doors down and it's a 16-seater bar. So it's super intimate. You just sit at the bar. There's no other tables and it's all seafood focused and they change the menu pretty often. It's a small menu, but I have been there probably 4 times now and blown away every single time. I think it is one of the best places in existence right now. So if you like seafood, highly, highly recommend.
Great answer. I got some date nights and lined up here. This is good.
Yeah. And make a reservation at Rella because it's definitely small. It's smaller. I think they're taking them right now because of COVID. Normally it's, I think, walk-in only, but they'll take them right now and you'll be blown away. It's incredible.
Well, Mackenzie, thank you so much for your time.
It was hard to narrow down.
No, that was good. That was a great answer. Thank you so much. You're just doing amazing work in our community. I'm excited to see you grow with your businesses and see what's in store in the future. So thanks again for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. I hope you gained a lot of value from what Mackenzie shared with us today, and we'll share this with family and friends. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can join me next time with a new local guest in the health and wellness space. I hope you're having an amazing day, and I'll talk with you soon. Thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Again, I'm Dr. Matt Driscoll, owner and operator of Driscoll Chiropractic in Webster, New York. Are you dealing with aches and pains on a daily basis? I'm here to tell you that it does not have to be like that. I want to help you get out of pain. I want to help you solve your problems. I want to unravel what happened in the past to lead to where you're at now. So if that's you and you have questions about your health, call me, text me, email me. Go to my website, DriscollChiropracticNY.com. Read a little bit more about myself and my approach. You can call or text 585-672-3870. You can email me, info@DriscollChiropracticNY.com. You can find me on Facebook, Driscoll Chiropractic NY, or on Instagram, @DR.Driscoll. One more thing, guys, if you don't mind popping over to Apple Podcast Reviews and leaving me a 5-star review or any star, it doesn't matter. It's just feedback for me. And the goal and the mission of this podcast is to reach more people and to help more people. So thanks again, guys, for listening. It means the world to me. Buckle up. I got some great guests lined up. Talk to you soon.